Hello, Sexy Sunday. It's the best day of the week because I get to share a convo with you about sex, relationships, and being the most free and confident version of yourself. I'm big on making my own rules and normalizing these kinds of conversations because I believe that the more we talk about it, the better sex we're all going to have because we'll be more educated and hornier. We walk around and hardly broach this topic in our normal lives, but I'm trying to change that. This is storytelling that's entertaining as hell, that will leave you laughing and gasping, introducing ideas that'll change you and break you open to celebrating your sexy self. Come with a curious head and brave heart, and let's play. I'm Bonnie Weeks, and this is gonna be fun. Welcome back to the podcast. This is part two, sexies, of our conversation with Rocky Heron. So welcome, Rocky. Thanks for being back here with me.
Of course, my pleasure. Nowhere else I'd rather be. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, I love it. Well, our conversation from our last, from our first kind of half of this was, I felt like a really awesome setup to dive in a little bit more. And so I was thinking about it, like, I would love to hear more about you as a kid and in regards to like sexuality and you owning who you are today. Right. And you're like, wow, I really know what I want now. And you've tried some things. I know you're an only child. I know that you and your mom go to Burning Man together. Well, your mom goes to Burning Man at the same time you go to Burning Man, whether or not like that feels like you do it together.
But, it feels like we do it together. Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
This last burn was my ninth and it was her seventh. So we've been going together for seven burns now. This was our first time actually camping together. So we've always kind of, some years we've driven in together or driven out together. I mean, I'm often kind of involved in her planning process and vice versa. We've always camped close by, but this year we stayed together, which was actually really wonderful.
That's awesome. Well, and so then like, this conversation about like you and your mom, and you have a different relationship with your dad than with your mom, of course, like as we all have different relationships with different parents. But what was that experience as a kid, like being Rocky as a kid and even in discovery then of your sexuality, or which it feels like too big of a question to ask, but what can you share about an experience where you're like, maybe feel like you first learned about what sex was or a memory from your early childhood around sex?
I've always had a very, certainly when I was younger, a very sort of innocent intrigue around sex and sexuality. Even now, I don't really view, you know, I'm not a very kinky person. I don't have a lot of, you know, like more of the sort of like I'll say depraved, that might not be a very supportive word, but like, you know, sexual fantasies and things. It always felt like this exploration and play. When I was younger, there were several experiences that I had where I found myself, I mean, I think many kids do, where we're kind of figuring out what this body is. You know, we have some inkling of like, you know, sex and sexuality, whether that's through seeing it or hearing about it, or even just kind of feeling the beginnings of it in our body. And we want to explore it. But then there's also this sense of like, is this okay? Is this appropriate? Like, is there shame here? And usually for me, and I think this is probably true again of most people, there is no shame in the initial kind of exploration of it until someone catches you or until you talk about it and someone is shocked, you know, or someone is like, or you get in trouble, you know, then it's like, oh, I guess that's wrong. I feel like my whole life there's, I always want to run things through the filter of human design these days, but it is in my design. I have this gift, excuse me, that's about vitality and wanting to like improve and enhance things. It's the drive to sort of extract more joy out of experiences that I have. And it happens to show up in my chart in a specific way where it can sort of lead to like indulgence or the exploration of like almost like perverse behavior for the purpose of experiencing more joy. And this is something like a frequency that I carry. And looking back in my life, there's been many experiences, several that really stand out, where I felt like people would just come around me and like my presence would sort of cause a desire or a curiosity in them to explore like things that might be deemed like perverse or like, you know,
what part of this in their chart? What part of this is in your chart?
If you know design, like, it's my gate 58. I have gate 58. Okay. That's fixed in what's called the detriment, but it's fixed in a position that it kind of can show up in this way. It's not a bad thing. I mean, like I've thought about like, how is this a gift, you know? And I recognize that for many years, I mean, we've talked about this in previous episodes, like I've always been interested in exploring kind of the fullness of what it means to be human, you know, not just kind of the light, but also the shadow, to find, you know, the paradox of what it means to be, to indulge in our physicality and also to revel in our spirituality. And so I think I've always sort of been a safe place for people to explore things that maybe would have been unsafe with other people. But because this, I've always felt like I've had this balance of like, I know kind of how far to take something and when to kind of, when it crosses over from being playful or being sustainable or being innocent isn't necessarily the word, but respectful to kind of dark or detrimental or dangerous.
So you're saying that you have felt like you've had that innate sense from the time when you were younger.
I don't know that I certainly couldn't articulate it then, but I've never had an interest in like taking things to past the point of no return. Like I've always had a curiosity about exploring different things. But I've always had a love for myself to a certain extent. I've always appreciated my body. I've always appreciated being alive and being me, you know? So approaching things from that vantage point versus, you know, having kind of the tendency to want to like harm yourself or abuse yourself or punish yourself. That's just not really been in me. So I know you asked about specific experience, but I think kind of I've had many experiences in my life. But the first one that comes to mind is when I was about 4 or 5, I lived next door to another only child, a girl who had a single mom as well. And I think that she probably saw her mom, I don't know if she saw her having sex or, you know, she had an awareness of sex that I didn't have. And we would have like play dates and stuff. We literally lived right next door to each other in like a little cul-de-sac. So we were very in close quarters. And she would talk to me about sex, or, you know, her impression of what sex was. And I think there were several times where we would sort of like simulate sex, you know, it was like, okay, we're going to take our clothes off and lie on top of each other kind of thing. And, you know, I was like, okay, like, I guess we're going to have sex. Yeah, sure. Sounds fun. And one day I came home from hanging out with her and, you know, quote unquote, having sex. And I told my mom, I said, hey, mom, you know, Sarah and I had sex. she goes, what? You know, like, what? I said, yeah, we had sex. And I don't, you know, I was 4 or 5, so I don't really remember like the detail. I do have a memory of like her sitting me down and actually she shared with me what sex was at that age, because I think she wanted, you know, it's like if I mean, she was clear once I told her what happened that we did not indeed have sex, but But I think she wanted me to understand what that meant, and also have an appreciation for what it wasn't, I guess, but certainly like the implications of what it was. And so, you know, whether that was like, I don't remember the details of what she shared, but like, I feel like from an early age, I've had an awareness of what sex was because of that. I think as a result, I didn't really have a lot of, or too much, there were some other experiences that stand out, but I didn't have a lot of shame around sex. I knew, I was aware of what it was. I was aware that I was like too young to be having it. And, and I think it also kind of created somewhat of an open door with my mom to be able to like discuss certain things. So I never was really made to feel like it was some dirty, inappropriate or uncomfortable. I mean, certainly it's uncomfortable to talk about sex with your parents. That it wasn't like we were just, you know, gabbing it up about intercourse and stuff when I was a kid, but it just sort of like demystified it from an early age.
Yes.
So yeah, that's then of course, you know, that I had other experiences where then I would explore, do things. And then some, like, can I share another story?
Please do.
So I had an experience with a boy, a neighbor boy, when I was probably like 7 or 8, where we would like hang out and similar kind of situation. We weren't having sex, but it was like, okay, we're going to like lie on top of each other and like put our, or you know, in the bathtub and playing around or whatever it is. And there was one instance where my great grandmother was babysitting me, and she went to take a nap, and I knew enough that like what we were going to kind of do was not something that we'd want my great, you know, my 90-year-old great grandmother to see. So we waited till she took a nap, and then we went into like the shed in the back of my yard, in the backyard, and I think we just like laid on top of each other and put our mouths on each other. Like it was very much just like, you know, sandwich, like just sitting,
like not moving. Just
no. Yeah. Yeah. You know, just like, okay, now we're going to just feel, it was sort of a sensual thing of like, okay, just to feel another like naked body on top of you, you know, what does that feel? It was very curious, you know, it was 7 or 8. And then I remember, I still remember the shed doors sliding open and my great grandmother standing there seeing two little brown boys like pants down on top of each other and just being horrified. And that moment really affected me because it reflected in her eyes how shocking and horrifying this image was. That was the first time, really the only time in my childhood that I remember feeling like shame, like, ooh, I did something really bad. This was really, really, really bad. And to the point that when my mom came home from work, I hid from her. And because I was afraid of confronting, you know, that I would get in trouble or that, you know, I felt embarrassed. I felt like I had done something. So this thing that came from a very innocent place in me was suddenly, you know, viewed as being really torrid and wrong. And to my mom's credit, the thing that was more upsetting to her, sorry, life downtown. The thing that was more upsetting to her was that I was hiding from her. She had heard about what happened and it didn't, you know, she wanted to have a conversation with me about it, but she didn't like that I would experience something that would have caused me shame or where I felt like I did something wrong in any kind of way, and then not share it with her for fear of getting in trouble. I think, you know, obviously she could draw the comparison to like, what if someone took advantage of me or something happened to me where I was unsafe and I had shame there. I didn't share it. So she created a safe place for me to talk about what happened and And I give her a lot of credit for that, because that could have been a moment that, I mean, it still is a moment that, that stuck with me, that I had to kind of process, you know, at various times in my life.
Gosh.
But it could have been a much more traumatic event if I had also been punished and also been shamed, you know, by my mom.
Oh my gosh. Like, as like a parent myself, like, and just thinking about, I mean, I think that's like the thing for my kids. And we talk about sex a lot out here, but about like that shame piece, or about, I was helping my youngest, write, I was editing his paper the other night, and we were up in my bedroom, and I was using the computer. He had written it on the computer. And so we were going through it, editing it. And I turn around and he is like, apparently like the move is called Cry Baby, but it also just looks like you're humping the ground. So he's been practicing that, you know? So he's like on my bed working his hips. And I'm like, okay, so it's twerk night on the bed. And he's like, yep. And I'm like, okay. And here we go. And we're like, are we talking about space dogs here? But like this, like, there's so much, I think, as parents, because there's such a wide variety that all of us are raised, and the different influence in our lives, and whatever your great grandma, however she maybe approached your mom, you know, or your grandma, and then the mom, and like the generations of how we like talk about or don't talk about sex. And I know I've had good friends who are like so uncomfortable themselves talking about it, and it doesn't set up our kids for having this like space. And so I think at this moment I was like, oh, like, just like it makes me like almost, it makes me feel emotional that your mom like showed up for you at that point, like as somebody who cares about you and your emotional process as your friend, like that your mom like was there in that space. And knowing that like as a brown man, as a gay man, as like, you know, all the things that like both that story holds in several ways of of where your life has like traveled to, like what a powerful influence and like older of you in that experience. So.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. It makes me emotional too, hearing you reflect that. Like, shout out to my mom. She really is. I mean, like, I think that more than anything, she's wanted to feel close to me. She's wanted to feel connected with me. And that has meant, you know, needing to adapt and grow and just open herself up, like expose herself up more and more and more, certainly as I've grown up. And, you know, cut to like, she just camped with me at Burning Man in a camp of like 25 freaky gay men, beautiful, wonderful, amazing, like freaky gay men and my 75-year-old mom, you know, and they did not censor themselves at all around her or from her. You know, and her love of the community and her love of these men and of her child was way stronger than any kind of like shock that she heard in terms of just like them discussing their sex lives and kinks and things that they're into. And she's just, you know, but it's been a journey, you know. It's why we didn't camp together for 7 years. It was like, I wanted there to be some kind of boundary that like, no, I'm going to go to Burning Man and I'm going to live my life and do my thing. Like, I don't want, you know, last thing you want is like mom over your shoulder, like, you know,
what are you doing over there, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and she just watched there's this show, I think it's on Netflix, called Uncoupled. It's with Neil Patrick Harris. And she watched the whole season and she said, you know, I just watched a couple episodes to have a sense of what she was watching. She's like, I realized I wanted to watch it so I could understand more about like gay dating culture. So she's like, I feel like I have an appreciation now for Grindr and how that works and like dick pics and the whole kind of culture around like what it means to date as a gay man. And I'm like, okay. So I was like, I should probably watch the show just so I want to know what she's taking in. Yeah. And yeah, I really give her a lot of credit. And to any, you know, and she had a moment on the playa where she said, and I'll probably get emotional sharing this because it's really beautiful. We were we were dancing out at some art car, having a great time. And she said, I can't understand how any parent could disown their child or could deny love and, you know, unconditional love to their child for being who they are. She said it because it's so their loss. Your world, your life is so much fun. I'm so grateful that I get to be a part of it, you know, that I get to yeah. you know. And I think that's what she's always wanted. She's wanted to have access, you know, not full access, but she's wanted to be she saw my life kind of from afar, and she saw that there was a playfulness and an innocence to it and a joy in it and a satisfaction and pleasure. And you know, she's a human too that wants all those things. And so I'm really grateful for her and for our experiences at Burning Man, because I think it's given her as close to like an up close and personal view of my lifestyle. Not that I live like that lifestyle off Playa all the time, but you know, it's given her an entry point into understanding the spirit of play, mm-hmm. of play. That informs, you know, that informs a lot of the things I do for fun, in a way that she recognizes it's not just for me, it's for her too, you know, in the ways that it is. Like it's our birthright to enjoy our innocence and to enjoy what it means to be in these bodies, you know, mm-hmm. and everything that entails.
Yeah. For sharing this, like, I think it just feels like mom shout out time. And mm-hmm. you know, I
God, sure. What a cool mom you must be, my gosh.
Well I think even hearing this, I'm like, oh, that's the mom I want to be, like that's like I want my kids, you know. And my oldest, actually, I love that I know I mentioned in our first episode, like our first half, that my oldest had his, you know, first kiss and then his heart got broken, but mm-hmm. Like Rocky, it was the sweetest thing. I was sitting in the backyard. Oh, it's gonna make me cry. Okay, hold on. I was sitting in the backyard, and he's like, my son is like 6'3". Like he's this like tall, big kid. He's strong. He's a runner. You know, he's like he's doing the things.
No.
Good-looking kid, and he's just like, he's a big space, and I'm smaller than he is. But mm-hmm. he came out there, and I was sitting on this chair, and I'd been reading a book, and he just came out, and I can just tell, like, we're both in Human Design, we're both emotional manifestors, both him and I. Mm-hmm. And so like, I can see it in him, and I'm like, tell me the things. And he like, will just walk out, or he'll walk towards me, and I can see it in him. Like, just say them all, go ahead and say them. And then he just like starts talking, and then he starts crying as he's feeling his heart broken and just like, mm-hmm. you know, filling this space. And I'm like, here, come sit with me. And I'm like, I'm so much smaller than him. He just sits on my lap, and he lays across me, and his like head is trying to reach all the way up to the chair behind me, but he just like lays his head on my shoulder, and he's just crying. And I'm just like holding this very large mm-hmm. man child mm-hmm. as he's like processing. And we probably sat there for like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. As he like we're talking through the things, and just like the gift it is as a parent to try to continually, and it is a fuck ton of work to like try to keep that gate open, to keep the door open, to like mm-hmm. keep it shame free, to like keep the conversation going. It is a lot of work, but like the gift it is to like meet your kids in that, mm-hmm. like there's nothing else I could do. I mean, like that is what I'm here for. You know, if I'm going to be mm-hmm. their parent, like if it's not that, like then what else am I even doing?
Mm-hmm. And I guess, I mean, I'm not a parent, but like, it also must, well, obviously, like, keep you continuously growing. I mean, I think that's kind of to my mom's point. She was like, you know, to just deny your children's experience or create such a boundary of like disapproval or whatever it is, like, you stop growing, mm-hmm. you know, because this is your offspring. This is the future generation. This is the future. Like, you know, it creates this, like, my mom has had to do more work than I have to stay involved in my life. Yeah. You know, not to say it's a two-way, I mean, it is a two-way street. You know, we had sort of a bit of a friction after the burn, and part of it's just like coming down and everything that goes along with getting out of there. But I've wanted to keep our relationship current. You know, I've wanted to continuously share with her who I am, not just, I mean, I'm not talking about sexually, but just like, as I'm learning more about myself, you know, here are ways to better respect me and how I mean, how to communicate with me, like I would with any friend and like I would expect from any friend. And that's just not really a part of her generation in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, it can just feel sort of complicated and like, you know, that generation was so just conditioned. I mean, we all are to a certain extent, to just kind of shut up, be polite, like, you know, fall in line, do as you're told, or you know, sacrifice your own kind of preferences and well-being and inner guidance for just like the good of the collective and on and on. And I shared with her, you know, at any point I can just put up a wall where you can be mom again, you know, and I can treat you like, you know, like most people that I know treat their mom, where they're sort of in this other bracket, in this other category, and call in, check in, how's mom? And then that's it. But like, we're friends. I mean, you're as close as a mother can be in terms of like our soul connection. And so I'm continuously growing. And that means that you're going to have to continuously grow, even though you're 75 years old. Like, she has plenty of reasons and excuses to like, just be done. Like, a lot of growth has happened already. But like, if we're going to stay close, like we are, our relationship also has to keep growing. It's not a fixed or a static thing.
Yeah.
And for me, that's sort of like automatic. You know, I not that my growth is automatic, but for where I'm in my life, and for her, I imagine it's a choice.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, whoa. Mm.
You know? Well, and I think this is my mom. My mom is 59, and I think as far as mom love goes, like, I was just in Mexico and sharing pictures of myself where I'm naked. Mm-hmm. Just like things covering up different body parts. And as she was scrolling through my pictures, and man, like there's a deep dive into the wonders of my mother and how she's evolved and grown. Mm-hmm. Like, just hearing about your mom, I'm like, oh, same, because she's scrolling through the pictures and she was showing my dad, and my dad's like, well, there's naked Bonnie again.
Well,
great. And my mom, she told me that. She's like, and I just told him, you know what? If we were there, she's like, yep, there she is. And if we were there, we were going to be naked too. And like, this race, that is not how I was raised. That is not the culture that my parents like have been part of. And watching that, and I have like a whole other, I think I have a whole other episode coming that I'll kind of dive into. I don't know if it'll be on this podcast or on Yoga Strong, about the adventure over the past like 3-4 months, et cetera, of one of my kiddos who, and the identity transition that they have gone through, mm-hmm. and the way mm-hmm. that my mom has shown up for that kiddo of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, it's just, I don't know, all mom love.
Yeah.
For a moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild. Like every, like all of my cousins, everybody in my generation in my family, both on my mom and my dad's side, are all queer, you know, whether it's lesbian, trans, gay, bi, non-binary. Interesting. I mean, like, just interesting. Like,
yeah,
no one came out straight. Like, we all kind of like fractalized and into various colors of the rainbow. And I remember when I came out to like my grandma, and you know, as a gay man, like what a moment that was, and how it you know, her, to her credit too, I mean, she's no longer with us, but like, her love, she was very, 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 very religious. So like, you know, the fact that she was, I guess, taught or trained to believe that I would be going to hell, you know, And that her love for me transcended all of that. Like, I don't know what that was like for her internally. I'm sure she prayed for me every night, you know, for my soul to be saved. She never attempted to like reform me or like, you know, she never shamed me. And she was kind to all of my partners and all of that. But that must have been such something that she really, really wrestled with. And then when my cousin came out as gay and then non-binary and then like trans, like just what a, you know, if you're trying to hold on to some sense of like quote unquote normalcy or like heteronormalcy, it's gotta feel so uncontrollable at a certain point where you either just throw your hands up and say, you know what, I'm especially if it's someone you love, like it's I can either fight against this or I can accept it and grow, you know, and that I love opportunities to grow, especially to grow in my perspective and grow in my understanding.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there will come a day where I'm like, okay, I've gone as far as I can go. This is where I draw a line in the sand. And then some aspect of life is going to force me to like, no, actually you gotta keep expanding, keep opening your mind and your heart. I don't have kids, so we'll see how that occurs. But shout out to the anybody like in the older generations who are willing to adapt and willing to expand in those ways.
Let's keep this with like expanding then, and this kind of like perspective of, I don't know, we're almost of reflection. And I think taking these experiences as a young kiddo and these experiences then with older folks in your life, and like you're in the center of this, and you're like, so maybe there's experiences where you're like not, you're learning how to not hold shame at home, right? Like that doesn't mean we don't grow up without any shame or don't have experiences where we are like, oh, that's shame. And maybe we can't even name that when we're a kid. But I feel like so much of it sometimes is shame gets unwound, I think, in some of my experiences when I dive into a deeper connection with myself. And I'm like, whose opinion matters? Like, yes, we all are, like, we're a community. Like we care about other people's opinions. We just do, like, we're a human race. Like we're human. That's part of it. And I think that there's some unshaming or like a deep dive into self, enough of a looking at reflection of self. And I would love for you to share about your experience of this reflection of self, and in specific, like this experience of you looking at yourself in the mirror. And you shared this on Instagram. And you shared that moment where you saw yourself. And I mean, there is approximately 1 billion stories that could be told from the time of you being 7 in the shed and you sitting here now. And like, well, we can continue to podcast all those million stories. And
this also to part 10.
Right? I'll just keep going. I mean, I'm game.
And when Bonnie says, here, hey, do you want to talk about sex? Like, okay, how long do we have?
Know, how many hours? Right? But like, in all of this, at this very moment, so like, let's zoom ahead now to like today, to this summer, to like this iteration of Rocky right now. And will you tell about that story of seeing yourself in the mirror?
Mm-hmm. So in yoga, we talk a lot about, well, there's a lot of conversation around duality and non-duality and kind of yoga philosophy, dualistic forms of thought and non-dualistic forms. And I think I've always considered myself more of a non-dualist. Lately, I've been able to really recognize and appreciate the dualistic and binary nature of consciousness, that for every gift, there is a shadow, you know, for everything we have, there's the opposite of it. There's the potential to experience, you know, as Abraham Hicks says, like both ends of the stick. You know, if the stick is abundance, you can experience abundance, you can experience poverty. It's all kind of the same, two sides of the same coin. So in a sense, there's the non-dualism of like it's one coin, but the dualism of there's two sides to that coin. And we talk about the word yoga. The word yoga implies a joining together of two separate things, or two things that could be operating independently, but finding a way for them to operate harmoniously. The word asana, which usually we translate as sort of like posture, the every yoga pose has the word asana at the end, translates to seat. You know, the seat that you take within yourself. And so that was a moment where I got it. Like that was a moment where, and for years I've practiced yoga asana, you know, contorting my body and activating my body in certain ways to facilitate alignment so that I could sit in my body with greater equanimity. And that was a moment where I recognized that there are two aspects of me. There's the passenger. There's my person I tend to think of as Rocky, perhaps even the person that I've thought was driving the ship, steering the ship. And I recognized that, no, actually, Rocky's not the driver. Rocky is the passenger. And the vehicle that I'm in, that I don't often think of as Rocky, is also Rocky. It's a different part of Rocky. Mm-hmm. And the vehicle and the passenger operate very, 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 very differently. And I think I've always tried to overpower the way that my vehicle operates with my personality, with the part of me that's conscious, with, you know, the passenger, so to speak, trying to drive the ship. And as a result, I've crashed into a lot of things, and I've felt a lot of resistance, and I've felt sort of unseen forces kind of overpowering my life, you know, where I'm trying to go this way, and like my ship keeps taking me that way. And I credit human design for this understanding. You know, in human design, I'm when you look at your profile, I'm a 6'2". You know, so the six is the passenger. It's the Rocky that I see as me, my personality. It's the archetype of the role model. It's the part of me that likes to be seen and to share in these ways, to share who I am and be in the world, and has a sort of ambition to continuously evolve into the best version of myself. And I have all these goals and these desires and these dreams for myself. And then there's my body, which is imprinted with the archetype of the hermit and the natural. It's the part of me that likes to be alone and really likes to play with himself and loves to learn through exploration, exploring, you know, the things that naturally interest me. And one of my earliest memories was in preschool, where I used to take myself off into the corner of the room, sort of like siloed by like certain bookshelves where I could be alone. And I would just play, you know, I would have my own little kind of make-believe world, and different characters that I would be. And you know, I'd build little things with blocks, and then I would like pretend I was, you know, whatever. I remember what I was doing. I just remember that like I was totally satisfied with myself. And I think my body was so happy in those moments, just playing with himself and crafting my own kind of world. But then my personality, you know, the Rocky that was forming, was like, okay, but you can't be alone all the time. Like if you're an only child, like if you don't get out there and meet people and make friends and da da da, then you're going to be alone. Like all these sort of fears that, so then like, Rocky the passenger sort of tried to steer the vehicle out into socializing with the other kids in class. And not to say it was all bad, but like that's when I would get bullied, that's when I would get made fun of, that's, you know, and I think my body kind of would wince from that and be like, see, like, why'd you have to go out there? You were so happy just playing with yourself. Why did you need to like force me out into the world? And I think that's been a dynamic that's played out throughout my whole life. Like, I've never really embraced my aloneness. My vehicle certainly has steered me into aloneness a lot, but I always kind of treated like me being alone as a problem I needed to solve. Like, oh, I'm alone again. I need to go reach out to somebody, or I need to go, you know, or I'm single again. Now it's time to look for a partner or be open. You know, it's just, I always was kind of defaulting to being alone, recognizing that's where my body was placing me. And then I would sort of, even a couple of days ago, I was at an event, and I found, you know, I'm really like not interested in like initiating, over initiating, and you know, trying to like make things happen when I go out. Like, I just kind of place myself somewhere and let my vehicle guide me, if that makes sense. Like, people will, I'll interact with the right people. But there were moments where I was standing by myself at this party, and my, you know, there's a voice in my head that's like, oh, you need to like find someone to talk to. Like, it's going to look weird. You're so tall. Everyone's going to see that you're just standing by yourself. Like, you don't have friends, blah, 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 blah. It's just this like stupid voice in my head that doesn't, it's not true. And meanwhile, my body is like thriving. I check in with my body, and my body's like, oh, how nice to just have a moment to just observe and just be alone, you know, like, so I'm giving you a very long answer on brand for me, but that was a moment where I was looking in the mirror, and I just saw it. I saw it for the first time that like this body I was looking at is the vehicle, is really what's running the show. And the eyes that are seeing the body, the eyes that were looking is me as I see myself to be. But I was seeing myself for the first time. I was seeing this incredible vessel that I get to inhabit, and not just like this machine that can carry out my will, but I was able to see and love and respect that like this particular vehicle that I operate is very unique and has its own way of being in the world that I'd never really honored previously. So in a sense, like it was the first time I felt like I had found my soulmate, like I was mating with my soul. My body was mating with my soul in that moment. And I was just in love with myself. Mm-hmm. And it just cracked me open in that moment. And it was funny because I had turned on the camera to record something else, and then it didn't work out, and I just kind of forgot about it, and I left the camera going, and then I was just sort of talking to myself, and then I said something that really made me laugh, and then it just turned into this like moment of awakening. And I was like, fuck it, I might as well just share this with everybody. Like,
yeah,
why like if I have a moment of sincere, profound, like unscripted like love for myself, what better thing, or is there anything better to share?
I don't think there is.
Thanks for asking. There's there's a lot to that answer, but those were all pieces that contributed to that moment for me.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for giving all the backstory. I think that's like, that's actually a really important piece of it, because it's not just that single moment. That single moment only means something because there's a backstory, because mm-hmm. there's like the Rocky who is making believe with the blocks in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And like all those pieces are important. And I mean, it is that, I think the way you put that, like your body was mating with your soul. And so often like this idea of like soulmate as like this person outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I've said before where within like open relationships, there's often this idea of a primary partner, primary mm-hmm. partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to blow that up and say, I think actually the way that primary partners are talked about as like maybe the person who's in your bed most often, the person you might live
mm-hmm.
with,
mm-hmm.
I think you yourself have to be your primary partner.
Yeah.
Actually, it doesn't, like, nobody else is primary partner. And like, how do you foster that relationship? So I feel like this is another way of saying that too, is like, you are your soulmate. How does your soul like mate, like your body, to like see yourself as that piece? Because then that like builds such an awareness piece of self to actually be able to be like, do I want to fuck this person? Do I want to have a deep conversation with this person? How's my relationship with my mom? How's my, like, what am I doing here? Like, you can't, like, there's not enough capacity unless mm-hmm. you are like having this soulmate experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, there's obviously a lot of talk about loving yourself. And I think it's easy for that to become just sort of another like thing you're working yes. on, like another mind thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I really got to love myself more here. Let me, you know, do this technique to love myself, I guess, so that I can like attract more love. And something I've been, I mean, that experience was a part of it, but what I've really, I know we'll talk about human design in a podcast soon in greater fashion, but what I think why I've really resonated with design is it's the first time I've been presented with the information that can show me not how to love myself, but really how to respect myself.
Mm.
And I don't think that you can love something without first respecting that thing or that person.
I like that.
You know, I think respect is a precursor to love. Cause you know, if you're disrespecting somebody that you claim to love. I mean, that was going back to, I was sharing the conversation with my mom. Like, my mom and I have tremendous love for each other, but there are times in which I might not feel respected by her, and vice versa. I never intend to disrespect her. She never intends to disrespect me, but those are moments where we need to like have a conversation so that both of us can feel like we're being respected within the context of the love we have for each other. And, you know, again, like you say, how do you respect yourself? Well, I respect myself by eating, you know, really clean, healthy, organic foods and drinking 8 glasses of water a day and getting enough sleep. And like, yes, that is all, those are all healthy choices for your body. But what I've appreciated about human design is it really shows you how to best respect yourself by operating in accordance with, you know, the way your energy flow is, you know, and it's also made me very, very, very sensitive, much more sensitive to the ways that I had disrespected myself by trying to force myself to be like everyone else, or try to cater to other people's wishes or desires for me. I mean, there's, we all disrespect each other and ourselves all day, every day, without even recognizing it, just by trying to live and contort ourselves in the world. And yeah, I feel like it's not like a target where I've landed there and I'm like, okay, now I love myself. But I think I arrived at that place of loving myself in a way that was like, oh, this is what that feels like. Oh, this is what that means. And it was like, oh, this is what asana is. This is what it means to sit within myself. And every time I would do it, every time I'd feel my soul kind of land in my body would like do like Tadasana. it would just align. And I was like, oh, that's what this practice is about. It's not about, you know, holding yourself in a form, you know, to find alignment. It's about aligning your soul with your body. And then, you know, there's a resonance there and it feels so good. So yeah, I think self-respect, you know, is the precursor to a lot of the things that we're talking about. And then that can then, you know, we've been talking about this in the last, or part one about sex and, you know, whatever the impetus is that causes you to want or be open to penetration with another person, be that, you know, physical or emotional or spiritual, you know, I think that the precursor to having a respectful, mutually satisfying, you know, loving perhaps exchange is that you first are offering that to yourself, mm-hmm. both people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the best kind of relationship for me is one where I am respecting myself and then also able to respect that the person that I'm relating to is not the same as me, you know? So how I'm going to respect you is not the same way that I respect myself. I have to respect what's unique about you, and vice versa. And you know, the more I've become interested in that and aware of that, and even have language around it, it feels so intimate and it feels so satisfying that I don't find myself craving sex as much, you know, as like the way to connect with another person. I still enjoy sex, but there's something so much more, I don't know, just like stimulating and fascinating and interesting and beautiful about deeply respecting yourself and another person at that level.
Thank you for sharing this. As we wrap up here, I think using this as the segue of talking about OnlyFans, and I'd love for you to share about OnlyFans for a minute. Like, I mean, I'm always just like on any platform, anybody who's here, like I'll share all the links to like find you and do the things, but like you've just jumped into OnlyFans. How long have you been doing that for? Maybe a year?
Almost. I signed up for last November.
Yeah. And, but like this idea of like self-respect, of this idea of like loving self. And I mean, I loved being objectified in some ways, and sometimes I don't want to be objectified. I think that's for all of us. You're like, yeah, go ahead, objectify me. Oh, that'd be nice right now. And then also like, let's not, you know, so I think there's a good balance of that where maybe that feels good. And also like this idea of like, you're doing the thing because you're like, I am me. And like, here I am. Like, is this filled with shame for me? Nope. This is like where I'm going to show up, you know? And so I'd love to like go and give you a couple minutes to share anything about OnlyFans and like kind of drop in.
Well, I'll be honest, at the time of recording this, I have been much less active on OnlyFans than I was previously. I'm really at a point now, and by the way, we were talking about this before we started recording, that like, as soon as I feel like I have to post something or I have to share something or it's expected that I contribute something in some way to a platform, it takes the fun out of it. It takes the joy out of it for me. And especially when that becomes like your body, you know, or your sex life, or, you know, more intimate aspects of yourself, you know, as soon as someone's messaging you kind of like saying, hey, you know, I paid this much per month, you know, $15, I need more, you know, of your dick or more of this or more of that. It's like, okay, that's not really, that's not why I got into it. But I've had some, you know, really cool experiences with it as well. And I think for me personally, OnlyFans was, there were several reasons why I wanted to do it. One, I kind of understood this about my design, I wanted to shift my sexuality into a place where like I was really able to honor and appreciate and like embrace that I am a sexual being. You know, I think so much of my life up until recently, through my work and career as a yoga teacher, there's been definitely a journey I've been on of sort of concealing certain aspects of myself from the general public and presenting a particular version of myself, you know, as teacher or like mentor or yogi. And it got to a point where I was like, well, I'm all these things, and it doesn't really feel sincere. It doesn't feel authentic for me to like continuously try to boundary this part of my life. Like why would I do that? You know, what am I trying to hide and why? Because on a personal level, there was no moral. I mean, I had no objection to like OnlyFans or even like sex work or, people that would present more of their bodies or their sexuality online. I just felt like, well, they can do it, but I can't do it. And I was like, well, why can't I do it? Oh, because you're this and because you're that. And it was like, well, that doesn't really, you know, it reached a point where it was like, that doesn't make sense anymore. Like that doesn't, those aren't reasons. It was like the same reason I got Arthur, my dog. Like for so many years, I was like, oh, I can't get a dog. I travel too much. I don't have enough money and blah, 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 blah. A dog's a big responsibility. And finally I was like, well, I don't really travel that much anymore. I have the funds to have a dog. Yeah, it makes sense to get a dog. I want a dog. So not to bring Arthur into my OnlyFans conversation, but in a similar way, it was just like all of the kind of mm-hmm. mental constructs that I had that, and you know, in my early 20s, like there were plenty of times where like I almost, you know, did porn, or I almost, you know, I almost said yes to certain things or opportunities. And there were times I did say yes, it just wasn't public. So yeah, I got tired of trying to shield the public from certain aspects of myself. And so it felt cathartic just to say, hey, here it is. Yeah. Here I am. You know, this is how I manifest as a sexual being in the world. I can still, you know, I'm still, it's not either or, you know, I can right. still show up and facilitate and do the things that I've always done. But I'm multifaceted and no longer do I wish to like overly segment or boundary all the different parts of who I am. This is me.
Yeah. For sharing. I think that that's like, it truly is like, you know, we're all more than one thing. And it's not like the leaving note here is like, be all the things. And whether you have OnlyFans and you continue to do it or you don't, then like, fantastic. And
yeah.
And be more than one thing, everybody. And Rocky, thank you so much for sharing today. And I'm sure, you know, we'll be back here again soon.
Yeah, I'm ready for part three anytime. You know, every time I end one of your podcasts, it feels so natural to talk to you and to share. And then every time I like end, I have a moment where I'm like, oh my God, did I really just talk about all that stuff? Like in public to everybody? And then I'm like, yeah, you did. And then I'm like, I want it. Let's do it again. So those are always like my favorite conversations where there's a part of me that's in shock that I'm having them in a public way. But I appreciate, again, I think I said this at the top, but I appreciate that you've always provided a safe space, not just for me, but for other people to be vulnerable and to be really real and honest. And like, that's, to be honest, like the only thing I'm really interested in these days. So thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you, Rocky. Mwah. Mwah. Thank you so much for getting your sexy on with me today. Hearing what you loved, what you learned, or what you're going to share with your lover makes me so damn happy. You can jump on my weekly Sexy Sunday email. You can find that link in the show notes and we can connect through there. And it would super turn me on if you left a rating and review about how much this podcast is giving you life. Until next time. Mwah.